Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us. You do know that we come your way every Sunday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. You know that we also archive the podcast at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, and on SoundCloud and iTunes. So if you are looking for Tell Me Your Story, the program that brings you new paradigms for a new world and gives you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true, then you can go to any one of those three locations, richarddugan.com, soundcloud.com, or I think it's itunes.com, and either type in my name, Richard Dugan, or Tell Me Your Story, or both, and you will find the interviews that we do every week, and we encourage you to do that. And we'll also be linked to our guest's website. We'll give that to you shortly here on richarddugan.com. The website on the schedules page as well as the radio shows page. We encourage you to continue your research and investigation. We hope that it brings you great joy. You know that 2017, 2018 has been kind of a tough year for the folks here on the Central Coast, of which I am, I say sadly only because of what happened. Sadly, I'm a member. I live here, and first, we've dealt with, you know, fire after fire. We've been here 13 years. And one fire after another, after another, after another. And only the fire in July of 2017 did we have to be evacuated. It was like the 12th or 13th fire. Then we had another fire that came out of Santa Paula, called it the Thomas Fire, named after Thomas Aquinas. I believe it was either the school or the church that was in Santa Paula. Came all the way into Santa Barbara County, all the way across into Montecito area, at least in the mountains. Burned out all kinds of vegetation. And then all started on December 4th of 2017. Then January 9th, 2018. We had unbelievable rainfall. No one has ever seen anything like it before in their lives. And many of them have lived here many, many years longer than I. That caused an unbelievably destructive mudslide that literally went all the way down to the beach. We lost about 25, 30 people, sadly. And we're all still kind of working through all of this. And so when you start talking about these kinds of things, and you start talking with my guest about a year of inspired living, essays and exercises for self-reflection, Kelly Martinson, welcome to our program. No mudslides or fires here. Thank you for joining us on the program. I have to tell you, it's very difficult for many of us to find a day, let alone a year, of inspired living with kind of the things that we've been through. And of course, we're not alone. I mean, you take a look at Houston, you take a look at Florida, you take a look at Puerto Rico last year with the hurricanes. I mean, and again, those are specific things that affected the U.S. I mean, there have been things going on around the world that it makes it really hard to feel inspired, to get inspired. And, of course, folks can hear in my voice a little nasal congestion. You asked me how I was doing, and I said, well, aside from a head cold, I'm doing fine. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing great, and I do think it's I've laid out a lofty goal to have an entire year inspired. I think it's a challenge for sure. And I think you bring up a lot of things about adversity that people face. And the book talks about my own experience. So, you know, I live in Long Beach, New York. So we had Hurricane Sandy come through and wipe out pretty much our whole town, a third of my house, you know, full houses next door and by me. So one of the things that prompted me to write the book was the adversity. I had a sick child, I had a sick husband, I had been laid off from a job that really had defined me for 15 years. And, you know, it was like after I'd come back from one thing, I'd be like, okay, we're good, we're set. You know, something else, a hurricane would come through or a fire. We lost our house just 4 months ago to a house fire. So I get that it's a lofty goal and it's very hard. But I think probably all that adversity that I had experienced is the reason why I'm probably a good person to advocate for finding inspiration in your life, I think.
You mentioned something about losing your job and being laid off. In the year 2000, I was laid off 4 times.
Oof.
And I remember the sequence because it was rather humorous, even during the fact. The first 2 times I was laid off, I went to the unemployment office, filled out the paperwork. And after the first time, less than 2 weeks later, I found another job, so I didn't get a check. So the second time I got laid off, I did the same thing. 2 weeks later, within that 2 weeks, I got another job. Didn't get a check. So the third and fourth time, I didn't bother. I figured, look.
In a way, you knew you were getting a job.
It's going to be 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks, so why bother with the paperwork? And we sort of get those insights, so intuition, those intuitive moments. But in terms of a year of inspired living, we're talking about wherever you happen to be, whether it's January 1st or if you start the fiscal year on the 1st of July or whatever
right,
it is,
sure.
Or the middle of the month, start there and work your way forward and literally take it one day at a time.
It's a month-to-month chapter book, and it initiates with an introduction, and it sort of tells the reader that, the only thing I have to offer is my own experience. It's not like I'm a PhD in bereavement or, really I'm just an everyman or every woman that has faced probably more than most. Some people face a hurricane, a house fire, one cancer diagnosis in the family, one epilepsy diagnosis of a child. I faced a lot, and I always try to reframe things while I'm facing it. So that's the purpose of this book. And, the book also is if people are just having a great life, it's the opportunity to pause each month, and actually each week. It's written in weekly subchapters, and they're short. You could give the book 5 minutes a week, and you're going to read an anecdote, and it could be funny, it could be sad, it could be inspiring, and then there's blank pages for the reader to really engage and say, okay, so this chapter in January is about every year failing resolutions. And you know what? It talks about why you shouldn't and why you shouldn't blame yourself, but here's some blank pages. You write what you think. You might write, I never fail my resolutions. I put them down. I write them down. Or you might write, I always fail them. So maybe I should start writing them down. When I wrote the book, I never turned it into a publisher because I kept saying, it's not done, it's not done. I could not for the life of me figure out why isn't it done. And that's when I put in the blank pages. I said, because it's not meant to be, it's self-help, it's self-discovery. So self is the reader. They have to be really, the reader needs to be engaged in it.
Hmm. Well, and it's interactive, as the phrase goes, kind of interesting that a printed book could be interactive. But
yes.
It's interesting, too, that we take a look at when we go through stuff, we all do, and there are times when, like with these fires, I think, oh, my gosh, what am I going to do, and what will I... how will I overcome this and so forth? And yet I'm not the only one. I mean, there are several thousand people who are impacted in some fashion by all of these various things. And so this is actually going to help us not only to contemplate our feelings, hopes, and dreams, but maybe even take a look at, why isn't it always about me? I thought it was. How often do you think that it's all about you?
Yeah, there's a chapter in the book that's called Narcissism, and it talks about that, with social media and with, selfies are the most popular picture to be taken right now. And, if that's not the most narcissistic thing, that's the most popular form of photograph, that tells us something. We're self-obsessed. We're obsessed with putting our picture up on Instagram or Facebook and seeing how many likes. And what happens with that, the struggle with that, is you begin to think that not only are you thinking about yourself all the time, but that everybody around you and everything that goes on around you has to do with you or is in a response to you.
Well, I just thought that's the way it was.
Yeah. somebody cuts you off the road, your immediate reaction is, I'm going to give this guy the finger. He did it to me. And half the time, he's sidetracked. Yes, they shouldn't cut you off, but half the time it's just an innocent mistake. He's running, God forbid, to a funeral or to his kid's school who's been sick all this time. You know, it, if we pull ourselves out of this equation, you know, we're a kinder, gentler America, I think.
Yeah. I actually was given a rather interesting perspective on that, and that was that let's just say that guy in the blue SUV cut you off and so forth. Someone shared this principle with me, and I thought, well, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
This guy in the blue SUV did not get up this morning,
right,
call his friends and say, let's get Richard today.
This is going to be so fun. We're going to cut Richard right off.
Oh,
watch
you
him.
Bet. We're going to slam on the brakes in front of him, and he's going to pile in. That does not happen 99.9% of the time. I know that there are situations where there are people out to get someone, but
for
that's a whole different thing.
For sure.
And so I was able to put a little different spin on it.
The best, I have to say, the best quote I ever heard, and it's Eleanor Roosevelt, who's just such a fascinating character to begin with. You know, she was so ahead of her time. And she wrote, you wouldn't care, and I'm paraphrasing, but you wouldn't care what people thought about you if you realized how infrequently they're thinking about you. And I think that's, you know, that's in my book. It's just a good quote, and it's a good, you know, bonk on the head so that you can get out of our, you know, get out of ourselves, you know.
Yeah.
And then there's times that we need to get into ourselves, like into our head. So there's those are times that we say, okay, it's not all about us. But then there's things like, you know, chapters that we talk about. I talk about conscious eating, you know, eating for fuel, and also not depriving yourself, you know, finding balance between, you know, starvation and junk food, you know, just finding that balance. And that's a time when you do have to kind of go deep and go back into thinking about yourself and figuring out what are your food triggers. Are you eating for emotional eating? So there's a chapter, actually two chapters on that. So it vacillates back and forth between times when we really need to think about ourselves and times that we really need to say, okay, relax, so it's not all about you.
And as you say, there are times when we do need to focus on self. Because we've got to take care of ourselves if we're going to be there for other folks as well.
Sure, sure.
And so, you know, people need to bear that in mind as well. I just find it interesting, too. You also have a section you're dealing, and this is a hard one for a lot of folks, and I've dealt with this myself, the whole aspect of manifesting.
Yeah.
And we've done, countless programs. I shouldn't say that because I know there is a finite number of programs on the website, and so you can count them. But nonetheless, I digress. The whole aspect of attracting abundance without putting in the work, and there are those of us, as I said, myself included, who feel at times like, my God, I have been working my tail off. When am I going to get mine? Where is my quote-unquote reward? I used to think about this in terms of broadcasting and some of the programs that I used to produce. And you know, of course, I'd watch the Super Bowl. I'd watch the World Series. I'd watch all these other competitive championship games and so forth, the NBA Finals, and going, well, when's my Super Bowl?
Yeah.
You know, when's my NBA Final? When do I get to stand up in front of folks and say, I'm grateful for this award, but I didn't get here by myself, which I have always acknowledged with or without an award, that nobody gets anywhere in their lives without the support, the mentorship, and so forth of other people. And yet, because of the society in which we live, you know, there's that expectation that, you know, how much harder do I have to work? I hear this a lot from folks, whether they're teachers or in the medical profession and so forth, and they feel like, you know, they're being passed over, they're not being appreciated. My God, this medical facility makes millions of dollars, and they can't even show me, some kind of even just nominal appreciation for the fact that I'm one of the ones that helps bring in the millions by taking care of the patients, you know, the first responders, so to speak.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, like, one of the things, and I'm just, I don't know if it's even in the book, because it's something I've just been toying with lately, you know, in my own self-discovery, is I think, and it's so common, like, my son's a wrestler, he's a high school wrestler, and he did everything this year. He was supposed to go to the States, right? That's how it, you know, he worked, there wasn't an hour that he wasn't wrestling, there wasn't a minute he wasn't wrestling, and just because a ref made a bad call, he doesn't go to states. So now everything he spent 6 months, and he came out, he looked at me, he said, I can't try any harder. Like, I can't do any more than what I just did. And why aren't I, you know, it's been 3 years, why aren't I getting there? And then he said the same thing you're saying, but he is. But this guy Lee, who doesn't, or I don't even know the kid's name, who goes to practice every other day, he plays five other sports, he's going to states. Like, why does this happen? And that's kind of been in our family thought process the last month. And I read something, I don't know if you've heard of the ULA guys. They wrote a book called
ULA
Balance.
Yeah, we've actually had them on a couple of times. Fascinating concept.
They are great.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and so I talked to them just the other day, and one of the things, and it just hit me on the head, was I think what blocks the law of attraction or manifestation is envy. Is that envy is very dangerous, and it's a hard thing to stop. I envy things. I see people's nice new cars. It's a human reaction, but it is, I think, a manifestation blocker. So that's something even for myself that I'm working on. You know, envy and jealousy, which are, you know, how they say it, are two different things. But I don't know, after having this conversation with them, we were talking about envy and just what a blocker and what a, I think that comes in the way of manifestation. So if your manifestation is, I want to be, you know, retired at 52, that's one thing. But if you're like, I want to be retired at 52, just like Joe, because Joe doesn't deserve it, I think that gets into the energy of the whole manifestation. And literally, I don't even think that's in the book. That's just something, you know, you and I are blessed because we get to talk to some really, really profound people and get some pearls from each one of them. And that was one I walked away with, you know.
Well, I remember an interview that I did not too long ago. Well, actually, it was quite a while ago, but be that as it may. I know, I tend to get I sidetrack myself sometimes. Anyway, someone said, we were discussing The Secret and the Law of Attraction and so forth, and this was shortly after it came out, which of course was some time ago, and they said, well, you know, it's a great concept, but they left something out. I said, really? What'd they leave out? And they said, well, yes, it is true that you can attract to you the things that, you know, and you will attract to you. If you say, I don't want debt, guess what you're going to get? More debt. Or I want a fancy car, a new job that I love doing, and so on and so on and so on. But the part they left out was, is it in alignment with your life's purpose?
Yeah, and, guys talk about that too, yeah.
And the universe has an interesting way of dealing with that. This is just my theory. You can badger the universe until the universe finally cries uncle and says, look, all right, fine. Is that what you want that? Here it is. And now you are going to deal with the potential unintended consequences. It may not be part of your life's purpose, but you want it so bad, we're going to give it to you.
Right.
And, you know, it's that old phrase, you know, be careful what you wish for.
Wish for, yeah. Well, and the other thing, too, I find, like, I am a believer in, you know, manifestation. But in the book, I do also say, I believe in the law of attraction light. Because I also believe, and I've met people that are very... I tell the story in a book. I met this guy named Tony. He was going to be, you know, like a personal trainer to the stars or a motivational speaker to the stars. That was his goal. That was what he was trying to manifest. He hired a company to follow him when he went to places and photograph him. He had a personal, a woman with him. The two of them would be standing right in front of me. We'd be having a business meeting for my magazine, Natural Awakenings, and she would speak for him. He's standing right there, and she would say, so what Tony needs for him to be successful is for the ad that he's purchased in your magazine to, you know, shine or whatever it was. He was acting like he already had it, and I know that there's, you know, a belief to that. But at the end of the day, he couldn't pay his bills to me. So, you know, it was an interesting thing to witness. He was relying solely on just living like you already have it, but not doing the hard work to create client lists, network with people to, you know, to pursue this portion of his dream. So I always say law of attraction light. I think you can attract it, but you get not without some work, not without some hard work, you know?
Well, again, it goes back to the question that I just put forth, and that is how much work is enough to attract those things, because I said, you know, I've been burning the midnight oil, and I've been sweating and toiling and toiling, and nothing's happening. And so then I guess you have to look at another reason why it hasn't happened, right?
Right. Right. Is there self-sabotage? Is it not meant for you? You know, that was the other thing. I don't think my son wanted to hear it because he had literally, you know, killed himself for 3 months to obtain this goal. And just because of a ref, like a fluke, so, you know, it was a missed call by a, you know, I have to say, if it was meant for you, it wouldn't pass you by. So I don't know why it wasn't meant for you, but if it was, it wouldn't have passed you by. So, you know, I don't think he likes hearing it, that statement. But I think it's the only thing you can think, that there, you know, like you said, the universe has its plan.
And that's sort of the frustration as well, is like, okay, well, what's the universe's, can I see? Can I get a glimpse into what the universe's plan is for me? And, you know, we've kind of talked about that a little bit, you know, life's purpose and trying to find that for ourselves. Talk to us a little bit about yours.
You know, it's so funny because, again, I do a lot of self-reflection. I do a lot of journaling, and that's, you know, the goal with this book is to get people to sort of put pen to paper. And my own life purpose, I know, is to help others. I'm not 100% sure how that will manifest in terms of, you know, career. Initially, I was actually working at a biotech company in a research capability, and I was trying to get our drug free to patients who needed it at stage 4. So I've always, that's where I started my work. And after years and years of working with very, very sick patients, I wanted to do prevention. I said, okay, now I need to help people, but I need to get them before they're sick. I can't see stage 4 patients anymore. And, you know, the fact that I was laid off told me they're not going to see me anyway. So then I took my severance and I purchased a magazine that's a health and wellness magazine. And I thought, okay, this is how I'm going to help people. It's going to be preventative, and it's going to talk about green smoothies and meditation, and this is how I'm going to help people. And then that sort of turned into the book. I sent the book out to a bunch of publishers, and HCI Publications optioned the rights to it. And, you know, I feel like the response I'm getting for the book is this is helping people. I've gotten really, really wonderful feedback. But I don't know what's next. I don't know how it's all going to combine. I don't know if there's going to be another book. But I do know that if I had, you know, you write your question, if money's not a problem and you knew you would be a great success, what would you do? And then you sort of write down what it is. And 9 times out of 10, the first thing I write is help others, or help others with grace, you know, or humility. So I do know that that is my life goal. I think that's where I derive my most happiness. But I don't know. I don't know what's next. I don't know if it's the books that are the most powerful way to help people. I don't know if it's, you know, starting a business that provides jobs for people. I don't know what it is. But I do know that as long as I'm helping people, I can feel good about myself. And I mean, I guess that's our goal at the end of the day, right? To feel good about ourselves.
Well, certainly. I mean, it's one of those things that we aren't going to feel good all of the time. I mean, that's just the nature of the reality in which we live, this world. But even in those downtimes, whether it's fires, floods, head cold, we can find some kind of, I don't know, peace or contentment or something. I mean, you know, I look at it this way. You know, I right now, I kind of sound like the 1970s old FM jocks, you know, who were doing music overnight, you know.
Right.
And it's like, okay, that sounds great. And I always wanted a voice like that. And yet at the same time, it's like, I really miss my regular voice. I want it back. But, you know, you take a little joy in that. When we were evacuated, for example, from our home back in July of 2017 because of the Whittier fire, we stayed at 3 different hotels. and then at a residence of a friend of ours. And I looked at it as a working staycation because I still had, my wife and I both still had to go to work. And what was interesting was that I thought, hey, we're staying at hotels that ordinarily we wouldn't be able to stay at,
right,
or we wouldn't stay at. I could maybe write a review for Yelp or something, you know,
yeah,
you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
And I did look at it as sort of a vacation. And I, actually, the 6 months earlier, my wife and I took our first vacation in 10 years up to Yosemite in Nevada City. And the only rule was we weren't going to rush anywhere. We were going to take our time. And we did not rush anywhere. And it was, I have to say that during the holiday season of 2017, all I could think about was the vacation of 2016 and just remembering the wonderful scenery and just the relaxed atmosphere and the 26 degrees after sunrise at the Cedar Lodge outside Yosemite as we're packing up to head up to Nevada City, and how brisk and how wonderful that felt. I mean, I just, it was so thrilling. And I love the cold weather. Even though I'm from Phoenix, I have had all the heat I can handle. And just remembering those kinds of things. So there's so many different ways that we can, you know, it doesn't necessarily pull us out, but at least it maybe gives us, I don't know, maybe sort of a sense of buoyancy of sorts.
Right.
You know? And
yeah, for sure.
And I think that, that what you're doing here with this particular work, and again, folks, it's entitled A Year of Inspired Living. It is essays and guided journaling for self-reflection. And we encourage you to pick up a copy. How can people, of course, this is of course under inspiration and self-help as far as categories are concerned. How can people online get more information, maybe contact you, touch base with you? Because I can only imagine there's going to be at least another book and maybe of those stories that, inspiring stories that folks will put down in this journal, these in this book. And you know, maybe that could be a sequel, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a few ways. So ayearofinspiredliving.com is my website, and I'm also on Instagram. It's kelly.martinson, and also on Facebook at A Year of Inspired Living. So those are all ways you can reach me. And yeah, definitely I am working on another book, and the idea, we have a hashtag so that if somebody is doing the process on social media, we keep checking. It's hashtag A-Y-O-I-L, and this way we're trying to, you know, keep up with people's A Year of Inspired Living stories so that perhaps, right, in book two, we can share how, you know, other people's experiences who have done the program.
Do you know that I just got the acronym? I just got the...
I should have said A Year of Inspired Living.
I looked at that. I'm going hashtag A-Y-O-I. I wonder what that stands for. And it just clicked in. Oh, boy.
Ayo.
It's a head cold. I'll blame it on the head cold today.
Blame it on the head cold.
Exactly. You know, we're always looking, as we've been talking here, about finding those moments where we can relax. And here in Santa Barbara, for example, and I was fortunate enough to attend an event that took place on the 25th of February out in Carpinteria. It was called the Kick Ash Bash. And it was a day-long, in essence, it was a day-long concert with one notable musician after another. Alan Parsons and the Alan Parsons Project, Kenny Loggins, Katy Perry. I mean, Dennis Miller was there emceeing. I mean, the list goes on. I'm not going to sit here and continue to name drop, but the fact of the matter is a lot of these people live in this area. And what they wanted to do was they wanted to give people an opportunity after a month and a half of kind of letting their hair down, relaxing. I mean, you know, we're still, you know, we're no longer in, I guess, the disaster mode. We're now in recovery and rebuilding mode. But the grief, the mourning is still there, not only for those who lost their lives, but for the destruction and the loss of property and those types of things, and the impact on the community, you know, this was an opportunity again for people to come together. There was a young gal there. She was, I think, one of the first rescued from the mud. I kid you not, this young girl, teenager, she was pulled out of the mud. You could not recognize the fact that it was a human being. She was that covered. And she was there, and she sang. An unbelievable voice this gal has. I wish I could remember her name, but most people will know who it is. But she gave back, in spite of the fact that, you know, here she was trapped, I don't know for how long and how deep and all of this. I mean, it was just, and the acts of heroism by people who had no business going in to try to rescue. And it's like, hey, these are family members, even though they may not be blood relatives, they're in my community and they need help. But this event was, again, that sort of just an opportunity to just, I don't know, it wasn't really blowing off steam.
It was probably coming together,
yeah,
right?
More, exactly.
More than anything.
That's
the power. I think that's what I felt with Hurricane Sandy. You know, while it sounds crazy because I lost a third of my house, and that was only, 6 years ago, and then 3 months ago I lost the whole house. But I lost that house, but what I gained was so powerful because for weeks and months, our community, I mean, literally, I got to witness my two neighbors have hated each other. They're like the Hatfields and the McCoys have hated each other. We've been in the middle of these two families. And the second the sun came up after that hurricane just devastated our town, I mean, before the Army Corps of Engineers could come and the Air Force and everybody who rolled in on tanks, the one guy walks over and starts helping the other woman drag, you know, just the garbage out of her house. And
amazing.
You know, it's just seeing that is powerful. Yeah. You know, it's and I honestly can say now I'm better for having witnessed that.
Yeah.
You know, and the same thing when our house burned down just 3 months ago. It was crazy.
Yeah.
But the people came out of the woodworks. I mean, people were at my door within an hour with a new iPhone. You know, the guy who owns the Verizon store locally got an iPhone to me. I don't know him, you know, so that I could communicate. I got to get that back to him, though. I do, because I got my own. It's been sitting in a drawer. It's on my list of things to do.
Yeah.
You know, I think being part of that, so you can look at it two ways. You can look and say, oh, man, everything's stinks, everything, you know, or you can say what came out wonderful from that and what experiences were good from that.
Absolutely,
you know?
Absolutely. We need to take a break. I want to continue our conversation here. I think that there's still a whole lot more to say. We encourage people to go to ayearofinspiredstories.com, find out more about what Kelly's doing, and encourage you to pick up a copy and maybe begin the process of writing your own stories and so forth. And so we're talking here on the program today, as I've already stated, about A Year of Inspired Living, Essays and Guided Journaling for Self-Reflection. Kelly Martinson is my guest, and we're going to continue here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Tell me your story.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. We're talking today with Kelly Martinson. She is the author of A Year of Inspired Living, which could also turn into A Year of Inspired Stories. It all depends upon what happens down the road here, and that would be kind of cool, you know,
for sure,
to have something like that. We were certainly talking about a lot of different things, but, you know, I find it interesting, and maybe this is just the way that it happens, that and it's better that way, I suppose. It's unfortunate, but better, that the only time that we seem to really come together as a people is during these very difficult and challenging times.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, God forbid that it's man-made, you know, man-caused, but, you know, Mother Nature's doing her part, so to speak. But I think that maybe, as I say, maybe that's a good thing, that we do come together. We don't panic and race off in all different directions like a chicken with its head cut off.
Mm-hmm. Real cut and run.
Yeah, exactly. I remember the very first fire that I had to deal with back in 2006 when we first moved here. It was called the Perkins Fire, and it was north of Santa Barbara. And I mean, I didn't have any points of reference, so I didn't know how far or close it was. And I didn't know who to call. I had no contact information as far as those kinds of things were concerned. And I kid you not, I panicked. I mean, I was running around trying to figure out, what do we do? What do we do? There's a fire. I see the smoke. Because this was new to me. And over the years, you know, not that it's become commonplace, but now it's, all right, I know who to call if I see something. I know where to go online to get information if I see something or hear something, and so forth. So there were some pluses there. But these things do tend to bring us together. I mean, people come out of the woodwork to be helpful, to be kind, to be supportive. Talk to us. You were talking earlier about your experiences with Hurricane Sandy.
So my experience was I mentioned that I had been laid off. I had been laid off about 3 months before Hurricane Sandy, and I had made the decision that I wasn't going back to biotech. I was going to, like I said, meet people earlier and sort of focus on disease prevention, and I decided to take my severance package and put that money towards purchasing a magazine called Natural Awakenings. Natural Awakenings Long Island had been out for about 5 years, and it was a magazine that I had read, and I just, it was for sale, the territory, and I decided that's what I was going to do, and, you know, I put everything into it. I built a little office to lay out the magazine, and about a week after I dumped all that money into the magazine and had my basement office, Hurricane Sandy came barreling through. Like you said, the universe has other choices for you, you know, other plans for you, if you will.
Yeah. Well, it's, what is the phrase? Man makes plans and God laughs. Something like
right.
that.
Yeah, I've heard that. That's good.
But it's not a vindictive and vicious laugh. It's how silly, because you've made these plans and I have other plans for you. And that's another aspect, too, in terms of, you know, we talked earlier about life's purpose. And I know that this is sort of a generalized phrase, but I think it's still very, very appropriate. For me, life's purpose could be just to be of service, you know, and in whatever capacity we happen to be in. This program, for example, we're just trying to give people information. I mean, I am one of the, I don't know about biggest, but I'm a huge proponent of education. And I'm sick of hearing about people who are left behind. And a matter of fact, I've had people challenge me. Oh, you must be a conservative. You know, I said, no, I'm not a conservative. I want everybody to have an education, but I want them to get it where they're supposed to get it. We shouldn't have remedial courses in college because that's not where they're supposed to be. They're supposed to be ready for higher learning when they get to that post-secondary, not learning how to read and write.
Yeah.
Now, let me say this. And if you can't, I'm not going to say, no, you can't go there. I'm going to say, then let's get you where you need to be so you can walk through those Ivy League doors or whatever university or post-secondary facility institution you want to go to, and you're ready to rock and roll and go after whatever it is that you want.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because you talk post-secondary, and I've mentioned, I have a 17-year-old, and we're looking at colleges, and it's very, you know, he's prepared, he's done all his due diligence, he's taking these, you know, college-level classes now already, and the craziness of it is, it is so expensive, and like you said, it's not it's not that hard to get into these schools because it's a racket. It's, you know, they get $40,000 or $30,000. These schools are so expensive. They're like, my husband goes crazy. He says it's big business. Like, our kids should go to junior college really cheap, and then the next 2 years go somewhere, you know.
Yeah.
Because it's become just big business, like you said. They lower the class level in a college so that they can make more money. I mean, at the end of the day, they want more kids in the school because they make more money. So it's kind of changed, it seems.
Yeah, it's not about getting an education and seeing people have the degrees that they can use to get the kind of job that they want.
Right.
It is all about the money, and somehow that's got to change.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember a lot from grade school, mostly grade school, but also high school English, that irritates the daylights out of everybody around me, because I have these pet peeves when we're talking about reading a script. Or giving out phone numbers. For example, here in Santa Barbara, the area code is 805. It's 805, not 805. And yet, everybody says 805. Now, when I was in Phoenix, it was 602. But they would say 602. Well, I realize it's faster. I get that. And it has a nice flow to it. But it's incorrect. And I got into this industry to try to make a difference, to raise the bar, and it gets hard sometimes.
Yeah.
Or when you introduce yourself, would you stand in front of a crowd? Let's say you were asked to speak somewhere, and you were to introduce yourself, even though they may have introduced you, and you start out your presentation by saying, "Hi, this is Kelly Martinson." No, you wouldn't. "Hi, I'm Kelly Martinson."
Yeah.
And so I tell people, you're talking, you're in the first person, you're talking to one person, whether it's TV or radio. You would not introduce yourself, but you would introduce an acquaintance standing next to you to a third party. "This is so-and-so." Now, I granted, pet peeves of mine, but they're grammatically correct. And if we don't, and this is one of the problems I have with social media, is the, all of the acronyms and all of the... these different things. And then I understand that new words are created and have been down through the centuries. That's how we've gotten a lot of the words that we have in our language today. But at the same time, there are certain rules. Well, what's the point of having rules? I mean, you know, let's do away with all the traffic rules. You want to walk against the red? You want to drive your car against the red? Hey, no rules. Go ahead. It's no big deal. I challenged some college students in that regard, and I said, "Does anybody know what syntax is?" Now, in computer programming, if you don't have the syntax right, your program doesn't run.
Yeah.
Well, it's the same thing with the language.
For the language, of course, but they don't teach syntax anymore. You know, it's
not going to understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
You know. Mm-hmm. So, but that's one of the things that I find so fascinating is wanting to give people that education that everybody deserves. I had a professor tell me, "Not everybody deserves an education because some people are just stupid." And I'm thinking, wait a minute. What is stupid, and who gets to decide what stupid is? That just doesn't make any sense from a college professor.
Mm.
Now, everybody learns differently. Everybody learns differently. And especially everybody's inspired a little differently, too, because sometimes you've probably had this experience, Kelly, where somebody has said to you something over and maybe your husband, your kids, your friends, neighbors, over and over and over again. They've said the same phrase over and over again and just never sank in. And then some stranger out there on one of your book tours or your speaking engagements says exactly the same thing. And all of a sudden you have an epiphany. And it sinks in. It's like, oh, wow. Well, one of the things I've learned is you don't want to talk to the people who've been saying that to you for years, because they go, "Well, I've been telling you that for years,
right,
and you're just now."
Now you're getting it. Well, that's the thing. You do have to hear things a bunch of times before. I mean, even just being in sales, I remember you used to say you have to hear something, or marketing. You know, when I'm selling advertising, I always say, you know, people are ready to cut and run. I said, guerrilla marketing, you have to hear it 26 times for it to make an impression.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, so maybe the other person was just your 26th time.
That could be it, yeah. Yeah, it's really fascinating. Now, you say you're working on a second book now.
Yeah, Yep. So I'm working on another book that's exactly like this one. I don't have a title yet. It'll be a 12-month book as well, but it will incorporate some successes from this year. So we're going to wait till this year's finished, and I'm going to kind of collect. So if anybody has any, you know, inspiring stories that they want to share, and you know, just sort of aha moments that they may have, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I had some aha moments just the other day with the Ula guys, you know, anything like that, they can email me at ayearofinspiredliving.com, go to the website and connect with me and send me a message about it, and their story may be included. So it'll be a similar book where it's interactive, where the reader can write, but it will also have stories from 2018 or 2017, you know, added alongside, so you know, people can kind of relate with everybody's stories. I think we all can. And then I'm also on a third book, and it's about faith, because I think, for me, the only way that I have gotten through any of the stuff that I've gone through is with a certain amount of faith. And it's not blind. I mean, I talk about it in this book. I doubt every day, but, you know, when I'm not doubting, I'm believing, and that's pretty helpful, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, it is something that that we're trying to... elicit in the hearts and the minds of people is that there's still hope.
Yeah.
No matter what's going on, and we've had some experiences in this country in the last, not just in terms of natural disasters, but other things too, in the last 2, 3, 4 years, you know, that you just sit there and you scratch your head and you go, what the heck?
I know.
What is that all about?
What's going on?
Yeah. And... you know, and there does come a time when you have to stop and say, oh, okay, you know what, that may not be all that important, okay?
Right.
That, you know, we'll get through that. Who is it that, you know, you've put this wonderful little year-long, a year of inspired living together. Who inspires you?
You know, I would have to say, and I wrote this in a publisher letter just recently, I would have to say, my parents inspire me. They lost a child in a car accident when my sister was 8 years old, and the way they lived their life and without blame, with having faith, with remaining together, I think that was very inspiring to live under that roof. And then the other person I would definitely say is my husband. Because just seeing he's a person everybody admires, because you know he learns how to surf when he's 40 and he's, you know, out in Nicaragua surfing head high waves, and he's, you know, he's that guy. And then when he got sidelined with cancer, there was really never a moment of, you know, oh, why me? And you know, for his cancer, that really wasn't what was going to. His cancer was so rare that they couldn't use a cadaver liver for him. And you know, his brother, my husband's brother, is also an inspiration to me because he donated half his liver. Those two men and that process was very inspiring to me.
I know those are unbelievably challenging circumstances, to say the very least, and yet at the same time, awe-inspiring, because the fact that someone stepped up and gave the ultimate gift, if you will, in that regard, because without it, you know, your husband would not be here today, probably.
Absolutely. And to actually witness something like that, to witness a very healthy man with 3 young kids go into an 8-hour surgery, you know, a healthy man going into an optional 8-hour surgery where they would remove a half of his organ, you know, it's sort of overwhelming. I think even that's something that I still process a lot because it's just so mind-blowing. I think it's mind-blowing for my husband, too, you know.
So tell us a little bit about your, if you don't mind, your... experiences in terms of maybe some inspiring moments with your family. I'm curious as to how your family, parents and siblings and so forth, have taken to what you have put together here.
You know, I think my parents are extremely proud of me. You know, they came to one of, I had a book signing and lecture in Florida that I had set up, and they came to that. I don't think they really understood, like, oh, you're writing a book, you know, but when they heard that they were part of my inspirational journey, I think it made them feel good, you know, because it wasn't idyllic. Like, I don't want to give that impression that I had this perfect family. You know, when a family goes through a tragedy like that, like, perfection goes out the window. It can't be perfect. There's just too much pain under the surface. So it's not like they did nothing wrong, but, again, it was just the fact that I saw that they made it through that sort of crazy pain. I think that helps me get through all these things. I'm always like, yeah, but it's still not as bad as what my parents went through, and they survived, you know. And I guess at the end of the day, I would say they did more than survive. They thrived. They had a beautiful, long 60-year marriage. They golfed together still at 86 years old, you know. So that's very inspiring, and that's very it gives me a lot of hope, you know, for my future, for my kids' future. My sisters are very different than me. We're four different women. One of my sisters passed. She had a neck cancer. But I have two other sisters that, you know, it's a very interesting sibling relationship. We love each other almost to death. So we'll yell at each other, and we'll scream at each other, and we'll hang up on the phone on each other, and then 2 minutes later call each other up and go, hey, where's your book signing again? I want to make sure I can go. You know, so I think, you know, my relationships are probably very similar to somebody who's grown up in a home with sisters. You know, we're very, very close, but can become into each other's business and such, you know. But we support each other. We support each other, you know, very, very strongly. I support them and all that they're doing. And, you know, it's a great relationship. And my in-laws are the same. My in-laws, I've kind of lucked out in the family area twice because everybody loves my in-laws. Everybody, you know, oh, your in-laws are the best. And, you know, I call them mom and dad. They're like second parents to me. You know, I've been dating my husband since I'm 18. So, of course, they've been in my life 30 years now. But, you know, and again, I think it's not looking for perfection in people. I think I have great relationships because I'm not expecting them, one, to be like me. I think that's, you know, what do we get mad at people for? We get mad at people, like my sister Laura, I said to the other day, you're mad at this person because they didn't behave the way you would. If you stop expecting people to do what you would do, to live to your standards, your relationships are so much better, you know? So I think I have that. I don't expect, you know, my sisters to do things the way I would do it, and because of that, you know, I love their perfectly imperfect self, and I hope they love my perfectly imperfect self.
And when you think about being an inspiration to others, what goes through your mind? Because obviously there are people that will look at your book and say that.
You know, it's funny what I think. You had asked me at the very start of this interview, like, what do I want? And, you know, I have written my own personal, or started writing my own personal mission statement, and it's, you know, it's to help others, but then in big letters, it's with grace and humility. So when people say, oh, Kelly, you know, you're an inspiration, I get sort of embarrassed or uncomfortable, to be honest. I don't know why. I think that's something I have to work on. But I do. I get, you know, I want the book to be more about the reader than about Kelly. So I hope that I'm not an inspiration, but maybe that the approach that I've sort of discovered for myself when put in use by others, that is an inspiration, that the process more than the person is an inspiration. That's what I hope.
Right, right. Kind of like, you know, it's the message is important, not the messengers, kind of what you're saying. Kind of keeps the ego out of it.
Yeah, because I you know, I get a little, and I'm not shy. I was a theater major. I have my SAG acting card. But so it's not shy. It's just I don't want it to be confused with me. Because also because I could fail. Tomorrow, you know, I could do a chapter about eating good and green smoothies and cutting out the sugar. And tomorrow I could have a really bad day and I could walk into Walgreens and I could have, you know, 500 peeps, you know, the marshmallow peeps or something.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so I know that me as a person, I'm so flawed, and this is my journey on this process as well. But it's not about me per se. It's just about the way it's not the way I'm living. It's the way I want to live. It's the way I want to try to live. And I think that if other people want to live that way and try to live that way, overall, we'll be much more inspired in our daily life.
Yeah.
You know, it's like getting rid of anger. Anger doesn't serve anybody, but we hold it. Getting rid of judgment, getting rid of narcissism, waking up every day. I mean, just the practice of waking up every day, and you can write it or you can think it, but think about three things before you step a foot out of bed that you are grateful for. And, you know, that sets a tone for a totally different day. Again, it's not a perfect day. I could still hit my horn when somebody cuts me off, even though I've written a chapter about don't hit the horn. You know, we're just all perfectly imperfect, you know, so it's more the process than the person, I think.
Let me ask you, why is inspiration so important?
Well, that's a tricky question. I think because we're all guaranteed to be born, and we're all guaranteed to die. But in between, in that middle, there's nothing else that's guaranteed. We're probably guaranteed we're going to have to work. We're going to, you know, and we can eke out a very boring or cantankerous or stressful life if we just go on autopilot. But if we every day say, I've only got X amount of years here, I want it to be amazing. I want it to be inspirational. We're just deepening our experiences, our life experiences. I mean, there's two ways to go through life. You could go through it or you could go through it inspired. So, you know, given the choice, I'm going to pick inspiration every day. And it's not without work. You know, inspiration means when I'm talking to these women in the PTA who sometimes I might want to, like, oh, you know, they're making me crazy and they're judgmental and I want to, you know, maybe call them out on it. Inspirational is saying, okay, it's okay that they're not behaving like me. We can still be friends. I can still think their jokes are funny. You know, I just don't agree with what they're saying right now, you know. So that's inspirational because it's gotten me from, oh, I hate these people, let me go have a glass of wine, I can't even deal, to, okay, I accept them for them and they probably accept me for me, and it, I can go on with a smile on my face.
Yeah. It seems to me difficult sometimes to stay in that place. You know?
For sure. For sure. Like I said, I can't always do it. I can hardly ever do it. Not hardly ever. It's work. But on the days I do it, life is so much more rewarding. You know what I mean? It's so rewarding. It's so... you know, today I've had an inspired day. I did my journaling. I contemplated my mission statement. And again, people say, oh, who has time? I got a mortgage to pay. I can't journal and contemplate mission statements. But I think you don't have time not to. You know, you're talking about 5 minutes a day. And if anybody in the world can convince me that they don't have 5 minutes a day, I don't think they can convince me that. And what it happens is it opens up more time, because when you're writing, you're journaling, you're just even jotting notes about what's important. And you might look back at what's important on some of these chapters and say, you know what, this entire book I talked about, at the end of the year, I'm looking at my notes, and at the end of the year, these notes are all about my family. Yet, I am spending 80% of my time running around for work. So I've got to adjust that. I've got to, if my whole being of inspiration, if my whole inspiration amounts from time with my kids, then I have to recognize those kids are leaving in 4 years for college, and I've got to reassess. There are some work projects that I can say no to. There are some one or two overtimes that I can say, I'm going to do my family instead, you know? And I think that's the power of journaling in a book, is because you can go back and say, isn't that funny? I talk about my daughter's lacrosse so much, but yet I only made 2 out of the 7 games. Like, let me go back and think, what was I doing that was so important that I missed a game? And maybe this year, okay, I went 2 out of 7. No matter what, I'm hitting 4, you know. Or, hey, go for the gold. I'm going to hit every game. I'll go into work 2 hours earlier. You know, whatever it is. And I think journaling allows you to see what inspires you because it's the thing that keeps showing up for you. And a great example is when I was laid off from pharmaceutical, it was all I knew, and I was successful at it. I had climbed the ladder. I was on an executive path, and I had 3 months, and I had a non-compete. And I kept journaling and just writing notes, and what kept showing up was prevention, prevention, prevention. So it's kind of then that I said, I don't think I can go back to the business of selling product or marketing product or researching product to heal a problem. I think I need to work in a field that's helping people recognize prevention of a problem. So, you know, that opens up for you when you journal, and then that's your inspired life. You know, and I will be full disclaimer, full transparency, I am making a much less of a living, much less money than I was. You know, but we adjusted as a family. We adjusted because I'm living my authentic life, and that's worth more.
But what, if you can recall from back then to now, what was, let's say, your happiness quotient? Today, maybe what? It's an 8 or 9 as opposed to what back then?
Well, you know what's funny, too, is I wasn't unhappy in pharmaceuticals. It wasn't until they let me go that I realized, I missed their swim when they tried out for the swim team. It was a really important thing, and I missed that. And, you know, so it wasn't, again, until I had the clarity, you know, of not having a choice, you know, that I was able to. So, again, it was the universe sort of helping me out. When I got laid off, I was mad. I was sad. I couldn't even believe it. But I would say at the time find happiness where you are. I think if I had stayed in pharmaceuticals, for me, I might still have the same happiness quotient because I would still look back at my book and say, my family's the most important, so I need to adjust, you know? I need to whatever it is. But my life is definitely, I would say, life right now is a 9. Probably if I stayed in pharmaceuticals, it would be a 7.5, you know, an 8. It would have been tolerable. But the power of writing down just a stream of conscious keeps me hyper aware of, I need a reset. You know, I need to read. And that's what I'm hoping with this book. I'm hoping I throw some ideas out and they stick, you know, for people. And then people write their own, you know, narrative to themselves. Like, these started as publisher letters. So I'm hoping that people write their own publisher letter. Because my letters, my publisher letter is always just about, you know, the one I'm writing right now is, you know, why I still make my kids lunch and other lies I tell myself. Like, you know, I tell myself it's because I want to have them eating healthy, but really it's because I'm validating that, you know, I have more time on my hands now that they're older, and I'm trying to validate my space in their life, you know. So that's what the writing is. You know, for me, it's to identify things that are holding me back, things that I can use to push forward, and that's what I hope this book gives to the readers.
Hmm. Well, we encourage folks to go to ayearofinspiredliving.com. It's about essays and guided journaling for self-reflection. Kelly Martinson is my guest, and we're talking about this particular work. You are not only publisher of the, and you said the Natural Awakening Long Island.
Yeah, Natural Awakenings Long Island magazine.
Yeah. Just part of the largest family of Natural Awakening magazines. And obviously you've done a lot of different things, as you say, worked in pharmaceuticals and so forth. You know, I mean, we all do different things in our lives that, you know, sometimes we question. And I finally got to a point in my life where I realized that there was no wasted time.
Right.
That even though it may not seem like it's related to my life's purpose or my career goal, there's something there the universe has put me here for in this warehouse of light bulbs, because I actually worked in a warehouse filled with light bulbs. There's something here that I'm learning, and yeah. that I will take with me to the next step. So there is no wasted time. And I know right. a lot of people, they feel that way. It's like, well, wait a minute, but that job has nothing to do with, it doesn't matter. You know, it's what is it that you're taking away from it? And so that's a question of, you know, we talked earlier in the program about, you know, one of your sections about narcissism. Well, here is where it's all about you. But from the standpoint of figuring out where the lessons are coming from in the work that you are doing specifically that are going to carry you to the next step and the next step and so forth.
Right.
And it's just really, really, I think, very profound. There are times when I've actually done interviews and I'm wondering, what the heck was that one for? You know, it's a good interview. We did well. It was a good conversation. We talked a great deal, but I'm thinking, okay, how does that fit into new paradigms for a new world, you know? And well, it's because everybody's got their story. Everybody has ideas for the future, for the way they'd like to see things be. Doesn't mean that everybody's going to agree. But the fact of the matter is, and I look at it this way, for you have these wonderful ideas that you've put together in this particular work in your website, AYearOfInspiredLiving.com. And not everybody is going to go there and read the book and use it 100%. What they might do is they might take bits and pieces and incorporate that into their lives. And I say that that's part of our responsibility. James Redfield, in his Celestine Prophecy books, talks about how we each have messages for each other. Mm. And that we need to put down, bring down the shields, and let those messages out, because it allows the other person to take those messages and incorporate them and hopefully can build more on the puzzle that he or she's trying to put together in their life, and vice versa. Put down the shields, let his or her messages come through to you so that you can do the same thing. Now, we may never see the big picture, but we're still trying to put those pieces into place.
Yeah.
And we need each other to do that.
For sure.
We need each other to do that. We need you to do what you're doing, Kelly, and that is, of course, providing us with the opportunity of getting a copy of A Year of Inspired Living. Again, it's an essay. It's essays and guided journaling for self-reflection. First of all, I want to put out that if you should find yourself in the Santa Barbara area, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
Awesome.
And second of all, we have three final questions that you've sort of answered one of them, and I'm gonna put it to you anyway, so we have it in this sequence here. And again, I thank you so much for giving us so much time here on the program today. First question is, who is Kelly Martinson?
Oh, I'll tell you when I find out. who is Kelly Martinson? You know, I'm a wife, I'm a daughter, I'm a mom, business owner, and all-around person who just, again, feels like I'm put here to serve or help others. Like, the blessings that I've had in my life have to be, would feel like a burden if I wasn't utilizing them to help others. So I guess that's who I am, somebody who wants to help others.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
Oh, I guess I just said that too.
Okay.
Help others, yeah. I just know there's so many people, in every walk of life that I meet, and everybody's seeking help for something and inspiration and, just helping others live a better life.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
I don't know yet. I don't know yet. Again, I think, the theme is I want to help others, but I don't think I know yet how. So I think the life purpose, what I want to do, who I am, I'm a person who wants to, again, use the blessings that have, I've made good decisions. I've made good business decisions. Like, I've had some really big blessings. I've had some adversity, a lot, probably more than most. But I've gotten through each one. So I just feel that there's a meaning behind all of it, behind my blessings, behind my adversity, and I need to use those to benefit others, you know, and again, with humility and with grace, not with a great big billboard of my face.
Well, again, thank you so much for sharing with us here on the program, A Year of Inspired Living. And we encourage people to go to yearofinspiredliving.com to find out more about the book and Kelly Martinson and the work that she is doing. And again, Kelly, thank you again for joining us on the program.
Thank you so much for having me. This was great fun.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time. Love, Talal.